today, he called me out because he heard me say something was stupid. And he said, you're not supposed to say stupid, Dad. Yeah. And I said, it's okay to say it if it's true, son. But and I wasn't saying the person was stupid. I said that what they said was stupid.
I was going to share how I discovered that I was a second prodigal, or the older son. Junior and senior year, they would always give kind of the outstanding Christian student because I went to a Christian school. Man, I figured I was going to be the only one to ever win it unanimously because I was going to vote for myself. And that's very humble. Very humble. So
I've never been the second prodigal son, I didn't think. I told Mom the other day, I said, I love this sermon. This was like pride. I'm just now realizing I've always been the second prodigal. I was the second prodigal and the first prodigal at the same time. This is cool. I have a nice, easy day today. I can hear and talk about everybody else. And then I found out you were talking to me, and I was like, daggone it. I got to dust off my old childhood guilty pleasure this weekend. Me and my dad went to the local dirt track Sunday night. They had a big dirt track race up there. And when I was younger than Christian's age, me and Dad used to go up there every Saturday night. Used to work on a lot of the cars and knew a lot of the guys and stuff. And I loved those things. I would help my dad. So I would go with my dad to the shop when they'd be working on three or four of them at the same time. He did a lot of bodywork and stuff. And I'd play in the cars. I'd hop in and out of the cars the whole time. I told Dad, I said, I can still remember. You could put me in a race car right now, and I could buckle myself without having a clue how to use it. I still remember how to buckle those five-point harnesses when I was like 3 years old. But they had some big names up there, and it was the dustiest I had ever.
You go home orange.
Yeah. But Christian was so funny. He was there, and he had his little earplugs in, and he said he wanted to be a race car driver when he grew up. Now
there you go.
I said, all right. Well listen, this will be fun.
The best thing to get him in is those Bandoleros. Mm-hmm. They race up at Wake County, and Kyle Busch's son is one of the ones that races up there. He wins most of the time because, well, I'm sure he's got some better equipment than most of these guys around here.
One of the guys I went to high school with, graduated high school with, his son races with those guys.
Yeah.
Last I heard, it's been a couple of years, but last I heard, he was racing with Busch's kid and Logano's kid, and Clint Boyer's got a kid that races with them. So
that's a lot of fun, man. I love watching those little kids racing that thing.
Me and my dad, so they were doing a contest up there that if you buy a ticket and if you win it, you take a lap in the two-seater car with one of those guys. Dad asked me if I wanted to do it, and I didn't bother getting a ticket. One, I didn't think we'd win. Number two, I didn't want to fight with Dad or who's going to get to ride if we won, because he'd want to about as much as I do.
Have you ever been to Wake County Speedway?
Oh, yeah. Ray and I went last Friday night.
Did you?
Yeah, I tried to go.
Still about the same? I haven't been there in a long time.
It's a little bit better, I think.
Is that they repainted it.
Yeah, well, off of 401.
Yeah.
Simpkins Road. Wake Chapel.
Right there at Wake Christian.
Yeah.
Wake Christian.
Okay.
But
Wake Chapel.
But, yeah, they've got some real good racing up there. They've repaved it, so it goes pretty good. There's a little bit of passing, not much.
Yeah.
But,
when you get the lead, you won pretty much.
Yeah.
But now they have some. Now they wreck each other a lot, and that's fun.
Yeah.
Hate to say it that way, but.
Yeah. You know. Well, that was Christian's first thing. So when we first got there, they were just running like hot laps. And first thing he asked me is, when are they going to start bumping into each other?
Yeah. When we got, I mean, come on.
Yeah.
You go to a race to see.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to see them just run laps. Golly. I get bored silly doing that.
I don't mind watching. Like, I don't. That is where some of the excitement comes from. But if you can, like that race Sunday night with the, I mean, they had some of the, couple of those that are like, as far as short track drivers go, they're legends. Yeah. But they put on a heck of a show.
Yeah. I don't want to see wrecks, but I want to see some good race.
I don't think, there might have been a spin or two. But
a little nudging.
With the leaders, it was so dusty. The leader went down into turn, or the second place car dives down into turn three, and you knew he had a run on him. But they disappear into the dust and comes out on the other side, and the second place guy had overtaken him in the dust cloud, but you couldn't see it.
Right.
I mean, it's a one-third mile track, and we're at the start-finish line.
It's been.
Well, welcome back to the other 167, Garrett Lill.
Hey.
Legendary Kenny Lewis.
Kenny the
Jet. Man, Ben Pierce.
Captain Ben.
Ben.
He's already got his license.
Got his name. I got to tell you, VBS this week, Kenny still got his shirt on from last night.
Oh, he's ready to go for tonight.
Oh, that's right. You didn't have it last night. That's right.
I am wearing it tonight.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to wear mine tonight.
Yeah.
I'm just.
When I came home, I mean, got here, Brene said, here's your shirt. I said, I don't want to redress, so I just left my shirt on.
Yeah. So.
Same one. Then so now I'm in uniform now.
You're in uniform. Mine's in the car. I'll change it a little bit. So I got to tell you, you've got Reese on the fence. She don't know what to do because she told me the fundraiser.
She told me.
Yeah, the fundraiser for the listeners who don't know I guess if the boys outraise the girls,
right,
you get dunked.
That's right.
In the dunk tank, and if the girls win, then Adam gets dunked. Okay, well, Reese, as soon as you announced that, she called me over and said, Daddy, I don't know what to do.
Yeah,
I said, what? She said, well, I want to win because she's super competitive.
I want the girls to win. But
super competitive.
I'd rather see Ben in the...
But she said, I really want to see Ben in the dunk tank. Yeah. I said, why?
Well, last year, we had a whole lot of boys given to the girls. And
oh, yeah.
This is just wrong.
Traitors. Y'all got a bunch of Judases on your team.
That's one of the reasons I was like, that's why I'm leaving y'all in the dust this time. And one of them said, you had us last year. I said, well, I'm like a good coach. I want to go prove I can take anybody and take them to a winning
trophy. Well, I have a feeling we're going to talk a little bit about self-righteousness and judging others today.
Ooh, yikes.
But before we do, I want to say this before I feel guilty about saying it later. I've seen something this morning. A lot of times, you know, we talk about there's no show prep, and there's no prep among us, so y'all have no idea what I'm about to say. But I don't prep, really, but there's Monday nights and Tuesday mornings I've started to notice that I'll spend a little bit more time on YouTube just seeing what else is out there. I mean, sometimes I get something for the show, sometimes I don't. There's some good stuff out there. There's some good, you know, creators and stuff. There's some good stuff on the internet. We talk about how bad the internet is. There's some good stuff out there, too.
Good stuff.
There's a lot of bad stuff, and then there's some other stuff that I would say is so bad, it's almost harmless, and I think I came across one of those this morning. So there is a video of, and I'll just tell the story exactly the way it is. I think our audience is mostly mature enough to understand what I'm talking about, but there was a video of a lesbian explaining that she and her partner or girlfriend had a child, mm-hmm. and they broke up, and the other party doesn't want to pay child support, so she is looking up the donor who contributed to the process in the beginning of this to seek child support from him, because she doesn't think it's fair that they can just donate and then not have anything to do with the child's life. And I thought, you know what, I know we ain't supposed to judge, but it's kind of like I told Christian the other day. He called me out because he heard me say something was stupid, and he said, you're not supposed to say stupid, Dad. And I said, it's okay to say it if it's true, son. But and I wasn't saying the person was stupid. I said that what they said was stupid. And I'm kidding about that. You're not supposed to do that either, I'm sure. But there are some things out there that are so far out there that it's like, you know what? I don't even know if that was... I don't know if God even minds me judging that. That's so far out there. I sent it to my mom. She sent me the old Buford T. Justice, what's the world coming to? Meme back. But, man, some crazy stuff out there. But speaking of judgment, I don't have but one topic, but it's the sermon from Sunday, because I've watched it now three times, and I think I can keep the whole show going with
this.
I had
to watch it three times, stay awake. Last night after VBS, I was writing my newsletter article, and I woke up, and I had a page of eyes, because my finger had fallen asleep.
Yeah.
Boy, this is going to be some newsletter here. Yeah, I did. I felt it.
Well, I listened to it three times because I was I was progressively more focused each time. The first time, I really wasn't that focused. It was Sunday morning. We had Father's Day lunch.
That's tough.
We were getting ready to cook. And all
live stream is wonderful, but I imagine for me, I get distracted. I get, or I might want to look away, or might somebody mm-hmm. walks in. That'd be hard for me.
If I'm live streaming, most of the time, I don't get dressed up for church, but I do treat it as, I treat it as if I'm
get
there.
Everybody gets still.
Yeah. Or I'll go to a different room if I need to a lot of times and just go, you know, go somewhere quiet and just really get focused on it. I wasn't able to do that for this week's, so I was halfway focused till the very end, and then I had to cut it off 5 minutes early to go prep the steaks, and so then I listened to it again driving back yesterday. And I got it all then, but I didn't have my notes. So then I watched it again last night and took notes. So I think I can probably keep us going on that.
I was
going
to say, you might memorize better than I did.
Yeah, there was a lot in there about – so here's the thing. You preached about the second prodigal son. And you said in the sermon that most sermons cut off at Luke 15.
Verse 24.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And we love the first prodigal. Yeah. We know, mm-hmm. we can relate to that. We love that there's grace. We love that there's forgiveness. But the gist is 25 through 32. I mean, that's mm-hmm. the...
And I think that I'm going a little bit too far to maybe say this, but it was, to me, I knew the story. I knew all of the story. Mm-hmm. I think in my mind, though, 25 through 32 was almost like my question a couple weeks ago, who are the other 99? It was almost an add-on that was not necessarily getting anywhere with it, right? Yeah. It was just kind of an add-on to help with the story. I'd never heard it. I don't think I've ever heard it preached on.
Right. I've never heard it many times preached
on. But there's, I don't think I'm saying I would argue this. I think you've already said it. I think that it's probably a bigger lesson in verses 25 through 32 than the rest of the story, or at least to the church.
Yeah.
I think it's one that...
I had this conversation with somebody Monday. They came in, were asking some questions, and I said, and it was all just, you know, hey, I had never thought about it this way. And I said, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's one of... To most people in the church, not everybody, but to a lot of people in the church.
Not you and I, right?
I put myself there. Oh, yeah, okay. I don't know. Well, I was going to put you and me there for sure.
I stand alone, I guess.
If you grew up in the church, yeah, or got saved at a young age, you relate, honestly, if you've got to be honest, you'd relate more to the second prodigal than you would the first, the older brother, than you would the younger, because, well, the younger brother to me is one that, okay, they went out and lived wild and everything else and then came back, versus that first one, he's always been the good one, the reliable one. He'd been in church, and I'm a nice guy. I do the right things. I say the right things. If you look at him, as I said, son, he would be the moral one, the dependable one, the one that everybody would say, look at, man, that guy, he's the good son.
Yeah.
But then the first prodigal, man, that's the black sheep.
Yeah. Well, like the second one, like, they're going to be really rewarded.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Well, but the first one that came, boy, he might just get there at the skin of his teeth. Yeah.
Yep. So, the second, you know how I found out I was a second, and I didn't share this. I was going to do it Sunday. I was going to share how I discovered that I was a second prodigal, or the older son. Was I was up for an award during my junior and senior year. Junior and senior year, they would always give kind of the outstanding Christian student, because I went to a Christian school. Man, I figured I was going to be the only one to ever win it unanimously, because I was going to vote for myself. And that's very humble, very humble. So I vote. Oh, by the way, I did win Employee of the Year, and I was the only unanimous person to ever win it. They announced it, and I was like, ooh. But anyway, I said, I'm going to win this thing hands down. Well, they go to announce it. I'm sitting there, and the winner is, and it ain't me.
You had to speak.
Yeah, and I sat back down. I was like, and boy, I tell you, it got me.
Well, you like Trump, you want to recount?
I'm calling rig. I was the older brother, to the point of, I don't even want to hear what this guy's got to say. Man, hey, how in the world could he get something like that? And I didn't. And that's when I realized, man, you're more of an older son than you realize. And I think if we got to be honest, and I think this goes for a lot of people, if you are Christian, very active in the church, conservative, busy serving, you might find a lot of pharisaical ways in you that you didn't think. I mean, you have more akin to the Pharisees than you'd like to believe. Now, I'm not saying you act that way, but as far as who the Pharisees were, they were very much the conservative, religious people that, you know, were busy with Judaism. I mean, I have to watch and guard my heart against, okay, I don't want to be a Pharisee in this stuff and, you know, look down on other people or think I'm better than others, that kind of thing.
I was going to ask, in fact, I don't know if you snuck a peek at my notes, but that was actually one of the questions I was going to ask, because you made it pretty clear. I don't think I'm reading too much into it at all to say this was a personal sermon for you. I mean, you seemed to, you said that.
It was about as personal as it can be
for
me, because this was my journey to where I found freedom. I was about 23, 24 when I found freedom. Real freedom, and had signs of it, and knew that I was that older brother, but had never heard about, okay, it's about a relationship. I don't know why I never caught that. It wasn't until I was in my 20s, and I heard the word relationship, and I said, that's what it's about. Not me keeping the rules, not me making sure I keep my nose clean, not me making sure I outperform Kenny, because, again, if God's love is a finite resource, and I got to get my share, and I got to make sure you don't get yours, or I got to get mine, then I'm competing against you.
Yeah.
Where if when you see it as what it is, an infinite resource, and he loves you, that makes a difference.
Yeah, that was one of my notes from it, is that it's not a finite resource and it's not a competition for it. And I was, so you've kind of touched on that already, because you said it kind of started when you were a junior, and then you said you started to find the freedom in it when you were in your 20s. So I was going to ask when this was and how it changed. So it sounds like it was a process. You didn't just realize when you were 17 or 18 that this is a problem and it was fixed the next day.
No, for me, like just after that award, it was, well, not everybody knows how wonderful I am.
I mean, slowly
but surely you go to college and you realize, for me, I didn't live on campus in college. I commuted back and forth. So I was still, it was like high school, four more years of it. So I didn't have any kind of, really, I had temptations, but not like, you know, the kind of freedom that a lot of kids get when they go to college.
Yeah.
And but then it was, I'll be honest with you, what really changed it was I had been taught the scripture since I was little. It was just, it was good, solid biblical preaching that emphasized grace and love, and at the same time emphasized the responsibility that we have to live a life worthy of the calling. And that's what changed it for me. So it was really God's word and the Holy Spirit, that just over time, and it's still, from time to time, I still fight it and say, all right, Ben, don't turn into the older brother, don't turn into a Pharisee, because we can do that real quick.
Yeah, and we don't have no right to, because we're, I kind of learned it when I wasn't as good as I thought I was by just reading the scripture, Isaiah.
You know,
it was filthy rags, and Paul says, I don't have any favorites.
Yeah.
And so, you know, over time, and of course Paul also says in Romans that, you know, we all have sinned, and we all are evil. I think that's in verse 10. But so the only difference between me and an unsaved person is, well, that I've accepted Christ as my Lord and Savior, and that's it.
Yeah.
I still think, I still have, I don't have as many wrong thoughts, but I still have my good days and my bad days. I still, you know, can get angry. I can still get, you know, mad or do stupid things. Hopefully not as much as I used to be able to.
But you are, but the beauty of it is you're a new creation in Christ, but at the same time that old flesh is still there.
And my attitude has changed more so. I don't live by my morals. I try and live by the morals that God has put before me as a standard.
And it really is about a life of, all right, a life that you want to live by the flesh, it leads to death, it leads to sorrow, it leads to anguish. But then he says the life of the Spirit is grace and peace, or joy and peace. So when you live by the Spirit, and again, when you live by the Spirit, it means to be dead to self, surrender to the Spirit. And that's where I went from self-effort, self, to Spirit-led. That's the big difference.
And the other thing is, I feel guilty when I do things wrong.
Mm-hmm.
There are certain things that people all have, or were supposed to have consciousness of, certain things. But now I'm just feel guilty that I didn't really, I should have showed more love, or I should have went and helped that person. Mm-hmm. Put in that cart. You know, she's in a walker and she's putting up her cart. Just, you know, little small things like that.
Well, and there's the freedom is another word that we've used a lot lately that I think has been a theme word for me more lately too. And that you've said it to me before. I remember early on you saying, well, I remember when it was when I sent you the original, when we first started the show, the very first graphic that I sent of what the cover art was going to be. I had horns coming out of my head, and you said, get rid of the horns and put a twisted halo on it instead, because you're free now.
And you're a new creation, man.
And I knew what the words were, but I didn't know what it meant.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like I knew what you were trying to get at, but it didn't make any sense necessarily at the time. But as we've talked about it more lately, I can go back and remember specific lines or two or three from the show that I've said that have kind of been painting that picture a little bit of understanding that freedom that comes with the humility itself,
right,
and that comes with getting the pressure off yourself and understanding it's all God's. It's
right.
God's stuff. And it's, my mom said the other day, she said, me and you need to quit trying to clean up God's mess. You know, it's his show, and the more we do that, that's where you find the peace. And I'll give you little, I hate to say this, especially today, I was, for whatever reason, no good reason at all, yesterday, I just was in a crappy mood, okay? I mean, I was in a good mood yesterday morning, and then yesterday afternoon, I got in a bad mood, and there was no reason for it. Nothing changed, nothing happened, and I felt horrible when I got here to VBS last night, because I thought, I don't know how I'm going to white knuckle my way through this, because yeah. I'm not in a the headspace for this right now.
That's right.
You know, I mean, and I feel terrible about it. Now, it helps a lot, because I've said before, being here, being around y'all, being in the building, it does help a lot.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
I didn't have to white knuckle it for long. 10 minutes into it, I was yeah, feeling it. But, man, I felt so terrible about the way I felt before that, because I didn't have a good reason for it. But it's worrying about something. It's getting down about something. Yeah. It's getting angry about something. It's doing all these things he tells you not to do. And when you do them, you don't have that freedom. You get hateful. You get ill. You start to do – and – when you can find that freedom of saying it ain't my problem, it's his world, and I'm just here to serve him.
That's the key.
You know, worried about something is always in the future, something that hadn't happened. I can't control that, but I know who can.
Yeah.
And the guilt of the past, those two will bring me down. But if I stay in the present, what God has told me to do today, I'm all right.
Yeah.
And I would submit, it also depends on what future you're looking at.
Well, yeah, I'm just talking about, you know, am I going to have enough money to live off of?
Borrowing problems or borrowing tomorrow's troubles
today
versus just the future being set your mind on things that are above and the future hope that we have. Okay, nothing wrong with that future.
Right.
And knowing that, okay, Lord, you know the future. I'm going to trust you in it. And like you said, am I going to have enough money to make it to the end of my life? Am I going to have, you know, all right, that's where, all right, I'm going to trust you, Lord.
Or my car truck's going to break down.
Yeah.
Did you ever get it fixed?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good.
How's it running?
This week's pretty good.
Yeah, you might trade it in and get a real one.
I might. No, it's been all right for the last month.
Okay,
so I'm happy.
I think one of the cool themes from Sunday that stuck out to me was I was riding the second time I was listening to it, and the thought hit me, and then I heard you say it like in literally within a minute or two of me thinking it, and I thought, okay, I guess it wasn't my thought. I guess I did remember that from the first time I listened to it. But it was, you said the older son, the second prodigal son, didn't have a whole lot of love. He didn't love his brother. No. And you said, I'd even say he doesn't love the father. And I had just thought of that a second or two before that he doesn't love his father. You know, if his servant as he is and as good as he is at following all the rules of his father, he doesn't love his father. I was going a slightly different direction with it than what you went in the sermon.
Right.
But I think you did kind of touch on it in the sermon too. I kind of asked the question, where was the second son when the first son was leaving?
Yeah.
You touched on that in the sermon. Why was he not stepping in? But also, while the first son was gone, I'd say the second brother had absolutely no empathy and feeling of his father's pain. I think he probably had a little bit of an attitude, but at least you've got one good son.
Yeah.
Why don't you worry about
you
this? Appreciate me for what I'm doing.
Give me a goat.
Right.
That I can celebrate with my kids.
Yeah, I've been here all
my friends.
Life. I haven't left. I've seen that before.
And I, you know, hey,
I deserve it.
Yeah.
And this joker comes back and you kill the fatted calf, you never even threw me so much as a party.
And then it's scriptural, I think, in Luke 15:32, when he says, "But we had to celebrate."
Yeah,
we had to celebrate. It should have been. If you love the Father, you should want to celebrate that His heart's not broken anymore.
This is the yes, sir. That's exactly right. Good way to put it. It's if you knew the pain and anguish he went through with his son. Hey, I'm happy for you, Dan.
Right.
Even if, hey, okay, I know brothers can sometimes be at odds, okay? But hey, Dad, I know this is where your heart was, because I know his dad. He had to have recognized his dad being miserable.
You know the feeling that you get when your kids have to go to the doctor? I know it really well with Gabe especially, because there's strep test especially. It drives him nuts. But anything that you know they're going to have to, whether it's getting blood drawn or some painful, you know that they're in pain, or anytime you see your kids in pain, you know how much it hurts you to see them in pain. And you would, when I see them throwing up, I would trade places with them in a heartbeat if I could, right? Because you just hate to see them suffering like that. Anybody that you love, that you truly love, you're going to have that reaction to. If I see you going through something, it's going to break my heart almost as if it was happening to me. And in some cases, maybe in a way that, hey, I would trade places with you if I could, to take, if it's a true love. Mm-hmm. All right, so when you think about that on a spiritual level, how we act toward non-believers or towards others that we know, or maybe even believers that just aren't quite walking at you just know that they're disappointing God. Right. You know that I personally, and I don't know, I'm sure I'm not the only one. I don't know if this is universal for everybody, but it's easy for me to have an indifference towards that person, especially to try to keep from judging them. It's easier to just say, well, that's their problem. That's their, and there might be some sympathy for them and their, and like, man, I hate what they've got coming in eternity, or man, I hate the way they're having to live their life. But I don't know how many times I've really sat and thought about it from the Father's perspective of how much pain he's feeling for that person. And that indifference towards non-believers is, you're not showing a lot of love for God when you have indifference towards those that are rejecting him and breaking his heart. That was just maybe a new twist on it that I had.
It's a very, very interesting twist, because I think there's a piece of it there that you're exactly right. And I think that's what really leads to intercession. Intercession is praying for others, putting yourself in their place, and then praying as, hey, Lord, would you work this way? So seeing that, hey, God's heart's broken, they're outside of God's will, they're not in a relationship, you know, definitely pray in that regard. And I think that's that empathy is so key to a Christian. Mm-hmm. And I think at the same time, there comes that, and I think maybe the reason that you didn't see the love for the Father, it goes back to, he saw it the wrong way. You're a slave owner, I'm a slave. Mm-hmm. Instead of, you're my dad and I'm your son. Yeah, I'm working for you, and yes, I'm serving, but I'm your son.
Yeah. And I think I saw both angles of it, right? Like, I think the cool thing about the prodigal son story for me is that I can now see, in some levels or another, I can relate to all three parties, right? I am a dad.
That's right.
So I can understand what it's like to lose a child.
That's right.
I have always loved the first prodigal son.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Man, I've been the first prodigal son so many times, I've lost count of it. So I've always appreciated how, you know, gracious he was. I've never been the second prodigal son, I didn't think. Mm. I told Mom the other day, I said, I love this sermon. This was like pride. When I sit back I know you're going to preach on the second prodigal, I thought, well, this is cool. I'll have a nice, easy day today. I can hear him talk about everybody else. And then I found out you were talking to me, and I was like, daggone it.
The second prodigal actually preaches harder. It really does.
It does.
It is one of, you got to be honest with yourself.
And the thing about it is, for me, is that I've not become the second prodigal son all of a sudden because I've gotten closer to God. I'm just now realizing I've always been the second prodigal. I was the second prodigal and the first prodigal at the same time. Hard as that is, I was doing things I shouldn't be doing, and then judging everybody else for doing stuff they weren't supposed to be doing. So it was just the first time, I guess, I'd seen it on that level. But I liked, so I said, you know, seeing it from the son's perspective, you aren't loving your father. If you've got somebody and you know their heart's broken and you're indifferent towards that heartbreak, that's not really love. But the way you talked about the father and the way you, I loved how you spent some time really talking, you finished the sermon saying, enough about the sons, let's talk about the father. He's a father that he comes to where you are.
Right.
He doesn't wait for you.
He is pursuing us.
He's pursuing us.
No matter where we're at on that spectrum, hardcore elder or hardcore younger prodigal.
And Jesus proves that. You know what I mean? Like, Jesus is the way he shows you, I'm coming to you. You can't come to me. I know you can't, but I'm seeking you where you are. And Jesus kind of shows what extent he's willing to go to seek us and to find us.
And really, I mean, I believe the invitation is to those Pharisees at that moment of, okay, you're mad, you're upset, you got heartburn because I'm receiving tax collectors and sinners. You can come in the party.
Yeah.
And the bad news is, I don't know that Jerusalem or Israel answered the invitation, didn't RSVP, and I know the Pharisees didn't. Maybe one or two. But for the most part, I mean, they're trying to, now you'll see in Luke, that's when they really begin, after about Luke 15, 16, they're going to really start ramping up of, we got to get rid of this guy. Mm-hmm. You know, it basically becomes, all right, it's now a hard right to the cross.
And the way you described the slave master, I had never thought of it that way, as me seeing God as a slave master. But that's pretty much it. I think that sums it up real well for how.
Well, and we've talked about we could do a bunch of S's. You see him as a sergeant, a drill sergeant. Mm-hmm. You see him as a slave master. We'll have to come up with another S. But you stop.
I was gonna say, are you on the fly with the S's? I mean, I think you're about to just have a whole bulletin right here.
Let's go. Let's go. But it is. That is almost a lot of people see God as that. As, okay, just a slave master. You tell me what I got to do, and I got to do it. I'm going to go, hey, I got to go serve, and I got to go, you know, versus, man, what an opportunity. I mean, I can look at Bible school as, oh, man, I got to give up a whole week of mine. I got to be here every night till 8:30, 9 o'clock. I don't want. Or, man, what an opportunity to spend time with kids, to spend time with others, and we get to talk about the Lord. Man, it's a great week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The way you worded it, I loved endure. He was enduring the Father instead of enjoying the Father.
Yep.
And that was.
That's too many Christians live there. Mm-hmm. It is an endurance rather than enjoying. And I believe God intends for us to enjoy His presence, not just endure it. I don't want somebody just to endure my presence. Okay, you got to put up with me.
Yeah.
I want you to enjoy being around me, and I want to enjoy being around you.
One thing that I got from your sermon. I never thought about it in my life. One of my sisters, actually, two of them, my father wouldn't pay their electric bill, buy them groceries, and just help them out. And here I am.
That sounds right with you.
And here I am.
Ben already knows where we're going with this.
I've seen this.
I've never borrowed any money. I married right. I haven't had a divorce. They've been multiple divorces. And I can remember how I would react to that. That would just mean, I deserve more.
Mm-hmm.
But I forgot they paid for my education. I forgot about that. And it seems like we can focus on someone else's problems or, you know, what they're getting and forget about what we've gotten. But, yeah, that used to burn me like crazy.
Oh, yeah. I've got some of that. I've seen some of that in my own family that went in. We've never borrowed, never had to come to you and ask.
And, yeah, and I thought
at the same time, man, the other one has gotten, you know, basically the inheritance is gone.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. And so that would just make me so angry because I'm the good one.
Yeah.
But I realized later I wasn't so good as I thought I was.
Mm-hmm.
They probably were better than me because they weren't criticizing me. I was actually criticizing them to my father. Yeah. It didn't work, but, yeah, so. Why are you doing that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's a tough one. That's a really tough one for me sometimes on the criticizing them. Because when somebody is upsetting you and you go to God to pray for them to, well, a lot of times it's really easy to turn that prayer into a complaint about one of your siblings, right?
Easy.
And there's really, I mean, it's simplest analogy in the world to compare it to my kids. When Reese wants to come and tell me how terrible Gabe is, well, that's okay, I love him as much as you. Gabe, you want to come tell me about how terrible Reese is, but I love her as much, you know. But we in the literal family unit, I've seen firsthand relationships destroyed because of a rivalry of trying to get what's mine, get what's fair. And who are you to decide what's fair, first of all? But second of all, from the church unit, you know, in more of a real life unit, I mean, there shouldn't be for your example there, you're looking at all the things that the father, you know, your parents gave your siblings, but
not what they gave me, it's what they gave them. That bothers me. It's
right.
Not what I got. It's
right.
It's what they're getting.
You gave them more.
Yeah.
Or why? They sure didn't deserve it.
Right. Where at the same time, you can look at it as, you know, being grateful. And this isn't a criticism of you, don't take it that way, but you could be grateful that your parents had the ability to help them out or had the grace and the forgiveness and all these types of things. Like, there's different ways you can look at all these situations. Yeah. And if you apply that in the church realm.
Well, I had tunnel vision.
Yeah, there you go. We all do. I mean, that's how we,
how I rationalize it, that, yeah, they're getting something I'm not getting.
Yeah. Oh, and I'm not, believe me, I'm talking about you because I don't want to talk about me, but you gave me the opportunity. But that's all of us. We like to, and that's where you lose the freedom, is because that gives you the opportunity to get angry, to get bitter, to get in these lousy moods.
Yep.
That if you just.
It puts you back in bondage.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I love the, and the way you closed it is you said he, what you said about everybody ends Luke 15 happy. Everybody, you know, everybody except for two people.
Everybody's
the,
happy.
The prodigal son and the fatted calf.
The fatted calf ain't happy. I can tell you that. And the thing of it is, and I think the thing that really stuck out to me as I studied was, it was his choice.
That
he's
was
miserable because he wants to be miserable. And I believe there are so many people that down deep, they may
there's
not.
My last
they may not. He don't. They may not. Down deep, they probably would not say that. But honestly, when you know where peace and joy and hope is found, and you don't choose to go in it, it's because you choose to be miserable. I firmly believe that, and I think there are so many Christians that are missing the joy of the Lord because they—I hate to say it—they choose to be.
Yeah.
And I don't know that they want to be miserable, but they sure are making the choice to be. And that's what's kind of—I mean, Pharisee, RSVP, you're invited. Older prodigal, younger prodigal, it makes no difference. RSVP, the Father will come to you where you are. He's reaching out, and all you got to do is say, yeah, I want to go in and party.
And when you said that he chooses to be, an interesting thing I just thought of there is that you didn't say he's unhappy because he wants to be. You said because he chooses to be, and you just made that distinction just there. Everybody doesn't necessarily want to be unhappy, but they do choose
down
it.
Deep, the very core of our being, that's the selfishness of us, or the looking out for self. Always, I want to be happy. I want to be whatever. I want to be that, but yeah, sometimes we choose not to be.
So many of the things that I've learned in the last year is how many of the things God tells us not to do are the equivalent of saying, don't stick that ink pen in that light socket, dummy. Because it's not that he's trying to be a tyrant, and as you said, a drill sergeant, or any, it's just
slave owner.
You can choose the painful path or the easy path. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really, if I'm being honest about it, I mean, that's where my bad attitude came from yesterday, is that I was choosing to be miserable and choosing to be selfish and choosing to focus on, you know, myself and what I was unhappy about. And at the same time, I've experienced so many times in the last little bit where the exact same circumstances are present and I'm not feeling it at all because I'm focusing on him. So I felt both sides of that. And when you do catch yourself in that, you know, being miserable, it makes you mad at yourself in a hurry because you know it. You know better. Right. But
I know a lot of things. You know, God does. He does tell us, well, you don't do this, don't do that. It's not for his benefit. It's for ours. Sure. You know, he's not trying to make us do this. He wants to help us. He's not trying to hurt us.
Yep.
He just wants to help us. Listen, it's not going to end good for you if you keep doing certain things. It's just not. That's just the way it is. And if you do this, yeah, you'll feel good about yourself. You'll have a good life here. He's warning Israel all the time, all through the Old Testament.
That's all it is.
Yeah.
Honestly, from Moses all the way through.
And God didn't punish Israel. They punished themselves.
Yep.
I mean, God said, well, you know,
He's going to give you what you want.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Eventually, I think that's that happened. He's going to give you what you want, whether you choose this day, whether walk in life or whether you choose to walk in misery. Your choice. At the beginning, when you started talking a little bit about the second brother and the older brother, when do we judge? All right, judge not lest you be judged. Mm-hmm. At the same time, the church is the pillar of truth.
Mm-hmm.
So when do we, as Christians, should we judge? What should we judge? Mm-hmm. How should we judge? And that just opens up a whole can of, let's see how we answer this.
I think.
Can we, before we go there, can you just, because I was thinking about this today, what could you quickly tell me the difference between judgment and discernment? Because I think you said something like.
Well, I mean, the gift of discernment is not always just, I can tell if you're right or wrong. Gift of discernment, I oftentimes equate to is wisdom. Of knowing, this might not be the way we need to go. And so discernment is being able to discern wisdom from the unwise, good choices from bad choices. Discernment also might at times be able to discern, I don't think he's on the up and up. And it might be something that they said, or you know, when someone comes saying, "Hey, man, I need a ride to the store. I need $15 because you know, my car broke down." But yet they say they live 55 miles away.
Yeah.
You walked all the way to this church from 55 miles away.
Yeah.
You know, the discernment says, wait a second, your story ain't matching up. Being able to really, for lack of a better term, use the term discern what's going on. Judgment, on the other hand, is, and I think that's the key, is, okay, how do you define it? What is it? And then when are we supposed to do it? When are we not? How are we supposed to do it? Because a verse that scares me is, what measure you judge, that's what measure of judgment you're going to get. Mm-hmm. Well, then I want to make sure I'm doing it with grace,
right?
Because I'd prefer grace over, okay.
When you put it that way, I don't think I want to judge at all.
Yeah, that's right. How about not?
I think now, and I've had this experience before, had a person tell me, what. Don't judge
me.
No, well, what's it, one of the, obey your leaders.
Okay.
And because they look after you in a church setting. I believe you can judge the office. Well, they're not doing this. They should be doing this, but not the person. I think there's two different things.
Hmm.
The president, he's not doing a good job. I don't like what he's doing. I'm not going to go say that he's, you know, he's going to hell, or, you know, that kind of thing. I'm not attacking him personally. But I believe in Timothy, Paul gives Timothy a list of what the elders are supposed to do, what pastors are supposed to do. They need to be responsible for that. Yes, I don't want to use the word judgment, because judgment seems like I'm better than
you're superior.
Yeah, but I believe you can judge what they're doing. I didn't hate to use the word judge, but, you know, what they're doing, but not judge them personally. You know, not say, well, he don't have a heart for God. He's a hypocritical Christian. No, but I do think that, and I don't know the example to give.
Right.
But do you know what I'm saying?
I do. I think it's one.
I don't think it's wrong to do that.
No, I think there is something that
responsibility
that's to be said. Well, it's accountability.
Accountability. He has to be accountable to us.
You hold your folks accountable of, okay, they're supposed to be doing X, Y, and Z. If they're not doing X, Y, and Z, why not? That's holding accountable. At the same time, that's not necessarily judging me.
Right.
It's just saying, okay, is he fulfilling his requirements? Is he doing what he's supposed to be doing?
What we hired him to do.
What can we do?
What we hired him to do.
Or what he's called to do. I like that better.
Yeah.
I think it's also one of, okay, so are we to judge the world? At the end time, the saints will, although Christ is. I think it's one of understanding that the world's going to act like the world.
Yeah, absolutely.
And for us to sit here and pass judgment, we need to be able to call right from wrong. And we need to be able to say, that's wrong. Or, hey, that's... But at the same time, does that mean I'm judging you? I'm just telling you what the Scripture says is right and wrong. And but in this day and time, we've gotten to where as soon as you say anything that I do is wrong, that's a personal attack.
Yeah.
And you're not accepting. You're tolerant. I don't see anywhere in there that says we're to be tolerant of sin and just say, whatever goes. No, we've got a standard. At the same time, though, I want to be careful about how I want to judge others of I'm better than you. And oftentimes, that's what we judge based on,
mm-hmm.
is I got to make sure I'm better than you. Again, the older brother process is, okay, I got to make sure if I'm going to judge you, I'm going to be very inflexible, and I'm going to make sure I hold you to the fullest extent of the law. Meanwhile, I'm able to skirt and move around the rules a little bit. I'm not as bad.
And of course, I don't think we're supposed to judge people's heart. You know, he's a Christian. I don't have the authority. I don't have the knowledge. Only God has that gift. I don't. If someone's a Christian or not, they've received the Lord or not. I mean, I probably can tell, but to just kind of beat somebody down, you know, say you're going to hell or something like that, I don't know if I have the authority to do that.
I know you don't. You don't have the authority.
Yeah. And I think it's one so that, of...
That's a God issue, because only God can judge righteously.
Yep.
Yeah. But far as I got a list of, well, they're not doing this, they're not doing this, they're not doing this, they're not doing that. he needs to go somewhere else. Because we have agreed on that. And, or at least let him explain himself. I'm talking about employment relationships that I've dealt with in my life.
Reese asked me a couple weeks ago, we were, I don't remember what the subject was, and I wouldn't probably say it if I did, but she asked me, I think she asked me if I knew anybody who was going to go to hell, or if I knew anybody, if anybody in our family would go to hell, or something like that. And I said, well, I don't know, and I don't, and I got to be careful with this with her, because what I ended up doing was turned it into a teachable moment, and I said, right. Actually, I don't know. For sure. I said, because God doesn't, we're not allowed to judge that. I said, and by the way, just so you know, that's one of his really, really, really big pet peeves. And that hurt her feelings. I've been dealing with that a lot with her lately, is I tell her new things that she didn't know were sins. Right. She gets really upset and starts crying like crazy. And I don't think it's quite that thing we were talking about a couple weeks ago where it's that I'm a terrible person. I think it really is she's sad to know that she broke this rule. And I said, look, you didn't know it. And believe me, there's a whole bunch I didn't know that God's been pointing out to me lately, right. too. So it's just, you're learning as part of this. But he doesn't like that. And the way I explain it to her is because he has said he's the only one who makes that call. He's the final judge. So when we start to make that call, we're putting ourselves on his level.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
You are usurping his authority and his role.
I know the person that's in hell. Repent unless you, or you're going to perish. Those people are in hell, but who are they? I don't know. Some people that I think, well, I don't think they made that. You know, I don't think they repented. Might have did the very last breath, the last breath they took. So I don't know. I cannot judge on that.
Did I ever tell you the story about my preacher in high school going to the funeral where they didn't know where the person was and how that went?
Oh boy, yeah, that was a tough.
So he told the story one time. I don't even know if he told the story in church or he told me how I heard it, but anyway, he went to a funeral for like one of his in-laws, so it was like he wasn't one of the preachers, but they were the first preacher came up and said an uplifting sermon of now we know he's in heaven,
right.
Peaceful thing. Next preacher comes up and said, I ain't burst your bubble, yeah, but
we're not
he
sure.
Ain't in heaven, we don't know. I think he said he ain't in heaven. he didn't
know he ain't.
And then the third one came up and probably, hopefully, apologized right. for the confusion and said that he was. And my preacher at the time looked at his wife. He said, well, honey, he got in 2 out of 3. It's such a hilarious story. I hope it was anecdotal story and it didn't really happen. But I think there is a difference probably between judging. I'm not sure that there is a difference. I think it's one that we can try to invent. There's a difference in me saying you're going to hell and telling you that you're sinning. And I think a lot of times we think that
we think
that we have the right to tell you, I'm not saying you're going to hell. I'm just telling you that what you're doing will make you go to hell if you don't change it. Well, what's the difference? And I think that, one of the things that's a gray area, if you want to call it that, to me is that, okay, I mean, we're all living in some sort of sin all the way to the end. Mm-hmm. Okay. We're never going to be, if you have to repent for every single sin before you breathe your last,
right?
Then
right,
I hope
right,
I've right. got a long runway before it's time, for me to go. Because
and how do you know when you're going?
If I'd have been in a car wreck yesterday afternoon on the way here, I'd have been in big trouble.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's the way that I don't think that's how it works. I certainly hope that's not how it works. Okay, so if somebody dies and they know God and they've believed in God and they've put their faith in God, and they still are living in some type of a sin, and y'all. Play with your imaginations all you want to and insert whatever sin that you... I think a lot of times we take the stance of saying, well, that sin they're going to hell for, mm-hmm. but my self-righteousness is okay.
Because well, that's a sin too.
Right, yeah. That's right. You're going to hell because you were still drinking when you died, mm-hmm. or you were still doing this when you died. I'm not going to hell for my self-righteousness. At the end of the day, the only one in the Bible is blaspheming against the Holy Spirit. That's the only one that is not
rejecting Christ.
Christ. That's the only one. That goes back to, we don't know their hearts. Right.
Well, the thing is, we're trying to judge which sin you can go to hell for.
That's it.
And according to God, this sin, cheating on your wife versus living self-righteous, is really not a big difference to him. That's going to hurt you. But... like I've said, I think I've said it on here, do you want to miss heaven by 6 inches or 16 miles or whatever? So we kind of on our process, thought process, you know, well, I'm not as bad as that person. We're still, you know, we're doing the comparing game.
And I think, too, we're talking, I think there's two levels of judging here. One is, is that person really saved? Is that person going to heaven? Versus, I'm judging you of, okay, that action right there is wrong. And I think oftentimes the way we, how we come about on that, sometimes we need to think about how we go at it. Mm-hmm. I think at times when we say somebody is wrong, we oftentimes do it with the self-righteousness, the smugness of, well, at least I got my stuff together. That's the older brother there. This younger brother of yours wasted his money on prostitutes. He did all these things. I mean, he made it into this guy. And then granted, what he did wasn't good, but I don't know that you had that intel to be able to say what you said. But that's what an older brother does. He makes it worse, or an older prodigal. They're going to make it worse because, again, remember, I'm competing. But I think it goes back to when you have to approach someone about, hey, look, what you're doing is not good. What you're doing is not right. It's a sin. You got to do it in a manner of gentleness and respect and love, not out of holier than thou. And, boy, how could you even think about doing that?
I was actually thinking and praying on this a little bit yesterday, so I've got a fresh experience on it. But I think that, first of all, I don't know what the answer is, but I do know what the first step is, and that's pray about it. I think that's the thing that a lot of people skip in their judging process, right? I remember telling you the story that time about the pastor, actually, that posted something on Facebook and almost bragged about this couple that approached them at the altar, and they, without even seeking the Lord, I immediately said this, and I thought, well, there's your first problem right there. Yeah. I don't always judge people, but I do always try to. Yeah, exactly. Why would you admit to it? Because here's the thing, if you'd seek the Lord first, you probably wouldn't have done it. even when you are in a situation where, because the fine line to me there is that when you see somebody walking in a way that you know is not the way God wants them to walk, it's not biblical.
All right.
And that can, again, use your imagination on that. You do know that as a Christian we have that responsibility, because if we just sit back and watch and say, well, I'm not going to judge.
Hey, that's what he says to Ezekiel. You're just as guilty.
That's right. You're not doing God's work. You're not working. You're not helping. You're indifferent to God's pain in that situation. But in my situation, in my prayer yesterday in that process, I think that what kind of came out of it is that you have to put on God's glasses when you see that person and see them with that love. And don't go at them in a, this is what you're doing wrong. Go at it in a, you're going to get hurt. And I know, because we said on the first show, all the commandments come down to thou shalt not hurt yourself in some way or another. It always does. So you have to approach that person with love. And then, back to, again, Ephesians 4. I think that's one of the verses that I go to for that. But once you're looking at that person with love and you're looking at that person through God's eyes, that helps to mold, I think, the next step. And I'm not sure that there can be a do this, then this, then this,
right?
Because you let the Spirit guide you through that.
Yeah, I think it's, there's no step process. I think it is let the Spirit guide you, help, then, go for His words and His discernment of how to, what to say and how to say it.
And always, I mean, grace is just such a big word that you just can't leave that out of that process. I mean, even last night with the kid, with the kids running around. Okay, look, if I wanted to be nitpicky and go around with a clipboard, I mean, I saw plenty of sin,
right?
Plenty of things you're not supposed to do in church, right? Well, okay, they're kids though.
You just make a list,
right? Which is going to be better for me to go around and tell them, don't say that. No, you're not allowed to do that. Didn't sound. They'll never come back. Okay, have some great. I mean, even like calling them down and stuff. I mean, like, yeah, we can't be. There's a line that we got to have some behavior.
Right. You're not a slave driver.
Right. But don't.
You're presenting God to them.
Yeah. I think with all tolerance and just being a little bit more, I've done this a lot with the kids probably, when they're being loud, it's getting on my nerves, I have to take my time. Okay, is this bothering me or is it wrong?
Right.
Because there is a difference.
That's right. That's
okay.
Right.
if they're just being loud, then it might just be, hey guys, do you mind toning it down just a little? It's a little too loud, you know? Dad's trying to drive. Dad's trying to whatever. Now, if they're fighting, Well, I don't like that. That's a different thing. But having more tolerance as Christians.
Or patience.
Yeah, patience. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, tolerance is not the right.
Yeah, I think tolerance can get you in a little bit of trouble. You want to be gracious, and you want to be. Mm-hmm. And I think patience comes in with that of, like, just like the world. The world's going to act like the world. Mm-hmm. So don't get all bent out of shape at them. At the same time, pray for them, love them, be there for them. And yes, they might be living a lifestyle that may be something you disagree with or whatever. I want them to see that, hey, there's still somebody that still cares for you. Even though I think what you're doing may be wrong, I still care for you. Mm-hmm. And I don't want them to think, you know, and I think that's the one thing that that my kids came off and said, yeah, we know that you don't like this as far as you know, according to the scriptures, it's a sin, but you don't treat the person that did it as, you know, second-class citizen. Right. I'm not going to at least acknowledge you or at least talk to you or at least I want you to come to know that, hey, the same Jesus that saved me can save you.
I was driving around the other day, and there were some teenage kids standing there smoking cigarettes.
Oh, okay. I thought it was going to be worse.
I was listening to them. So I smoked when I was a teenager, and I quit a bunch of times. I don't know the last time I've had one. It's been a long time. But Reese or somebody, Reese asked me, I think, the other day, something about smoking cigarettes. And I said to him, I said, please, please, please don't ever smoke cigarettes because they are ridiculously hard to quit and, like, ridiculously easy to get addicted to and ridiculously hard to quit. And in the meantime, you won't get any benefit out of it whatsoever, except you'll have a terrible taste in your mouth. And, like, it just please don't do that.
Plenty of reasons not to
yeah. That go beyond just it'll kill you and all this. It's just not, there's nothing good that comes out. As somebody who did it for a long time, from the time I started to the time I finally quit, didn't get a whole lot of good out of it in the first place. Mm-hmm. It was not worth it. So I'm seeing these kids out there last night. I didn't say anything to them about it, but I'm just sitting there thinking it wasn't judgment. It was, oh, man, I hope they don't go down that path very long because that's going to be – it's just not worth it like that. And I think that when you do approach somebody with that, with any sin, it needs to be with that type of an attitude of, hey, I really want to – if we go to play golf and you're lined up down the right side of straight at the woods and the fairway's this way, I would – if I do that, I'd like for you to point it out before I hit
you pivot about 20.
Yeah. I'm not judging. I'm just saying a path. That ain't it.
And if you don't listen, there you are.
There you go.
6 miles deep in the woods. Yeah. But, you know, I think one of the best ways, and maybe I should share this. I'll never forget, we used to go, we started the show or started talking here about racing. We used to go down to Rockingham, and this was on Saturdays. You could go down and watch the Busch Grand Nationals, and then they had the World Championship Pit Crew race.
Oh, yeah.
And we used to go down there all the time. We went down as college students. Well, we went with college students. Me and my friend went with two other guys from college that we had become friends with through racing. Well, I didn't know. They went down there, and they got down there, and they broke out a cooler. And in that cooler, they had – I said, Dad, Jim, they brought an entire ball. Well, I have too many stomach issues. Drinking, it was never a real challenge for me because I know it just tears me up to the point of I can't do it. So I was just sitting there drinking Mountain Dews and racing and having a fun time. Well, they were over there and they got just in that hot sun. It was just beating down on them. They started bumping their gums and there was a man sitting behind us and he asked one of them. He said, "Where are you boys from?" And he turned around and he said, "Fuquay Verena." And this is. That old man said, "I always thought there were smarter people from Fuquay Verena that wouldn't be doing dumb stuff." And I sat there and I turned around and I said, "Amen. They're awesome." I thought, that's a pretty good way of putting it is. Yeah. I always thought there was wiser people from Fuquay because y'all were about, doing some stuff that you're going to be regretting. And they did. They did. And that was where I kept wanting to. I kept eating pimento cheese sandwiches and offering it to them. Don't you want some?
Yeah.
And they're like, oh.
I mean, I've had enough of those. I've been on the other side of that story enough times that a lot of people that are living in any type of sin. Yeah. Alcohol is a really easy one because it's got a very immediate, very negative side effect, one that I know well. But all sins have that. In the long run, even self-righteousness.
Yes.
I mean, look at the story of the prodigal son. He's missing out on the party. Why? Because he didn't get his.
Well, he ruined everybody else's party, too.
Right.
And from a Christian's perspective, what does your righteousness get you above everybody? I mean, at the end of the day, why be miserable? You're going to the same heaven. You're doing like you're serving the same God. You're and serving the God voluntarily. Like you're right. No, we're not serving him as the master that he's making
slave
us.
Driver. Yeah.
Right. We're serving him because we have this freedom and we choose that this is what we want to do with it.
Right.
When you're doing it that way, it's not you don't benefit from getting angry and judgmental at anybody else's sins.
Right.
And approaching them with that love of saying, "Hey, look, you're going to feel rough tomorrow. You know that, right? Or you're going to, yeah. Whether that's literally or proverbial. Right. At the end of the day, all of the sins that God's made me stop that I didn't really want to, none of them were all that good for me. Right. You know what I mean?
No.
Yeah. Or good for anybody else around me in a lot of the cases. You know what I mean? It's everything he's making you do is for good.
Right.
You might not appreciate it at that very moment, but he's working it together for good. I mean, in all the stuff that I'm complaining about right now, you know what he's teaching me? A lot of patience and a lot of faith.
Yeah, I was going to say.
And you know what? I probably needed a lot of especially the patience part. So, okay.
That's right. Patience and faith. I tell you what, we ought to do 2 weeks on this one, man.
I was going to say, we can probably go about another 15, 20 minutes, and I'll just make it two shows. And that'll be the... we've already kind of started talking science now.
Well, we did. I tell you what, I got a topic I'll bring up.
Next week on the other 167. I'm truly convinced now that if the spiritual connection's there, anything's possible with the other three.
Right. Where are you going to set your mind? Where are you going to set your heart? But it's also that spiritual of where are you going to surrender today? What are you going to surrender? That's really the hard part of, all right, if I'm going to live this other 167, it's got to be a mind and a heart.
Some things that I think are wrong, it's not wrong. Right? We're just different people. There are some sins that drag me down that won't drag you down.
Right.
I kind of think maybe he's talking in that area. So
sometimes it can be probably a little annoying when you go to a Christian for advice, and we always tend to go to God as the answer. But he is. I mean, that's like, it doesn't matter. There have been so many things. I'm getting worked up now. I'm sorry. It's just one of those things that I'm sorry, but common denominator is common denominator at some point. You got to point it out. That's what it is. With him, anything's possible. And without him, it doesn't matter what you do. You ain't going to get it right.
A lot of Christianity in America, we don't have committed Christians. The heroes of my faith is not the first part of chapter 11. The people that are faithful to God when you can't do nothing. Being faithful regardless of your circumstances. To me, those are my heroes. It's easy to be faithful when everything's going right.
As long as I know I'm where he wants me, I don't care. That peace and that humility and that freedom comes from understanding that whatever he's doing, I trust him.
You don't need to understand. What you need is to hold his hand.
I don't know if I've heard that one.
It's a gospel song.